Thanks, everyone, for joining us. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we're delighted to have our once-a-month gathering here, our World Peace Circle meditation. And this is Thursday, October 2nd, 2025. So welcome, everyone, again, and we'll go ahead. So it looks like everyone, all of you have been here before, but there always are people that come in later with the recording. So I'll just mention we only go a maximum of 1 hour, and we have a meditation in the beginning. We're still here in California. We leave next month in November, and so we're here with the piano. I love that. So we can go ahead and get started and jump right in. I have a few things I want to share as we go along. But Lisa, thank you for being our co-host and letting people in if I have my eyes closed and I'm not looking at what's going on here. So, yeah, fantastic. All right. So let's go ahead then and just begin our time of meditation. Welcome, everyone. And here we go. We'll begin. So let's just turn our attention within. With every inhalation, now we invoke in our heart a feeling of gratitude giving thanks for this beautiful moment that we have together and with every exhalation we allow ourselves to let go into this present moment more and more deeply. Letting go of all of the news in the outer world, the issues of the day, allowing ourselves to rest in the truth of being, that what we are is infinite and eternal consciousness that was never born, undying, free, beyond all dualisms of disease and health, rich or poor, pleasure or pain. Eternal conscious awareness and always one, the infinite source. There's one life flowing through all of us. So we allow our heart to continue to glow with gratitude, radiating appreciation for everyone in our life, those who have blessed us in the past by their presence, by their teachings and their love, by their challenges. And we send our heartfelt appreciation to all those who are in our life in the present, giving thanks for their unique being. Giving thanks for all of the beings who touch our lives in the future. Abiding. The sense of appreciation for all of the co-workers in our movement to help liberate humanity from the delusion of superiority to an entitlement to exploit animals. Giving thanks for the movement for the liberation of animals and of all living beings, for the great examples of loving kindness and compassion who have walked this earth over the centuries and millennia, for the great teachers, by their example, founded traditions of wisdom and compassion. And may we awaken to the essence of these wisdom teachings as they come through our world religions and through the great philosophical traditions of our earth, and through the great music and art and architecture, literature, drama that are created in order to remind us of the truth, of the beauty of this earth and the beauty of the human spirit and of the life that we all share. And so we send our love now especially to all the free living animals, the birds and all the wildlife in the oceans and waters and on the land, how they refresh us and remind us of the tremendous intelligence nature and of the source of nature. We give thanks for all of the animals who are somehow caught within the net of human society. All of the animals used for food and research and other products, entertainment. All the animals who are with us as companion animals. May they all be happy and released from the bondage of abuse at human hands, to whatever degree that is happening. And we give thanks knowing that each and every one of us right here are on the path. Of connecting ever more deeply with the essence of our mind. With the essence of the spirit. And we see our whole physical body now filled with light. All seven chakras spinning. Radiating light out into our world, into the infinite web of relations. And this light is from the source. And we allow this light now to transform into loving kindness, filling our heart with every inhalation. As we inhale, filling our heart with a feeling of love and kindness. And with every exhalation, radiating love as a living light to all living beings, whoever they are. Just as the sun shines on every living being, no matter what, we allow our love to shine on every living being, no matter what. Radiating love also to ourself. As we make our way on the great path of discovery, abiding in our true home of love, breathing and radiating loving kindness, with every inhalation, now we engender in our heart the feeling of compassion, the yearning that all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering, and the yearning to act meaningfully, authentically, to help relieve their suffering. Abiding in our true home of compassion, breathing and radiating compassion, sending compassion to all living beings. With every inhalation now, we engender in our heart the feeling of joy. Mudita. The great joy that is our true nature. That doesn't need anything in the outer world. The joy of our being. And with every exhalation, we radiate joy in ever-expanding spheres of light, allowing the joy of our true nature to overflow in all directions and all dimensions. Abiding in our true home, abiding in joy, breathing and radiating joy to all living beings. And now finally we connect with the feeling of peace, abiding in our true home, peace and harmony. The great peace that reigns in our consciousness as we are filled with love and compassion and joy and gratitude. We are at peace. Exhalation, we radiate this peace to all living beings. Breathing and radiating peace and harmony. With every cell of our being, radiating the light of peace and seeing the whole earth now bathe in the light of peace, knowing that peace and compassion, love and joy encircle the earth for all beings everywhere. Abiding in a true home of peace. Breathing and radiating love. Breathing and radiating compassion. Breathing and radiating joy. Breathing and radiating peace. Breathing and radiating loving kindness, compassion, joy, and peace. Abiding in the heart of being, giving thanks, knowing that in every day and in every way, we are awakening to our potential of wisdom, compassion, creativity, and awareness to be an instrument of healing and of freedom and joy on this earth. We give thanks for the beauty of this earth, the beauty of animals, the beauty of our children and the children of all beings. We give thanks for the beautiful future that is beckoning and that is coming into being, because we are doing the inner work to purify our consciousness, to release delusion, to see through deception, to speak our truth for the benefit of all beings. And we give thanks knowing that we are part of the awakening of human consciousness on this earth during these critical times. Through the power and presence of the Infinite Spirit of Truth and Love indwelling, we give thanks knowing this is so. And so it is. Thank you, everyone. I really appreciate your joining us, as I said earlier. And here we are. So this is a wonderful opportunity we have together to explore the relationships between our consciousness and our world. And so most of you are part of the World Peace Diet Circle, where we meet on the third Thursday of every month, and we talk about the vegan movement and how it's connected to the whole world and the politics and whatever. And the first Thursday, which is today, we like to focus mainly on spiritual dimensions of all of this. So I mentioned last time that I was working on an article, and I just finished it yesterday, called The Seven Deadly PsyOps. And so that will be that'll be in your email inbox later today or tomorrow, because it is finished. In fact, you can go, if you just go to worldpeacediet.com, our website, and click on writings or essays, I guess it is, and it's the current one. It's up there. But it was really quite enjoyable for me to write this. It kind of puts together, I think I mentioned it to you last time, what they are, what I refer to as the seven deadly psyops. And they kind of, I think in a way, remind me or mirror a teaching from the Christian tradition that I've grown more and more to kind of appreciate, which is the teaching of the seven deadly sins. And sin meaning, I think, just sort of the old meaning of missing the mark. These are things that we could do better in our lives. And they are pride, greed, envy, lust, gluttony, anger, and sloth. And so those seven things tend to get in the way of our spiritual progress. And as I wrote an article about this a couple of years ago, how it's so interesting that all seven of those are really strongly promoted in our society, especially through corporate advertising and just through the general culture and the idea of technology making life easy so we can be comfortable all the time and don't have to do anything really to turn up the thermostat or turn it down or. And it's sort of disconnecting us from nature. So the seven heavenly virtues, which help us to overcome the seven deadly sins, are just the opposite of that. So those are, if I can remember them, they are humility, charity, gratitude, chastity, temperance, patience, and diligence. And you heard me at one point talk about diligence because I think that's the one. I mean, they're all important. They're all, you know, humility is probably the hardest one because we get very proud about how humble we are, you know. So, but diligence, I think, is really fantastic because it's the energy of our path, our life, and it's so important, I think, for us to keep our energy high. And we're surrounded by forces that are doing everything they can to weaken us. And I think one of the main ways we're weakened is when we're weakened ethically, when we sort of go down and become willing to shame and blame and criticize and judge others or try to get something for myself at the expense of others, put ourselves above others. And all these things, are somewhat promoted in our society by just the idea of consuming more and having more and being proud of what we've accomplished and, of course, being above others. Like, that's the main problem, of course, with animal agriculture. We're superior to animals, so we can use them. But there's this whole underlying current in our society of sort of hierarchy. And so the whole idea with the seven heavenly virtues, I think, is to try to do our best to purify our own consciousness. Because I think the main teaching that we are embracing is that not only is veganism, which is ahimsa, which is animal liberation and compassion for animals and each other, the most critical movement in the human world, but that it's never going to get anywhere if we as individuals are not embodying what veganism is, which is loving kindness for each other. And so this is where the real spiritual work really needs to be done. And it's, I think, the problem that the vegan movement has, like all social justice movements, is that we tend to blame everybody else except ourselves. You know, it's the fault of those darn corporations or those meat eaters or those whoever it is, somebody outside us. So the whole idea of transforming ourselves and being, as Gandhi said, the change we'd like to see in the world, I think takes on every day for me more and more significance and more importance. So anyway, that's the idea behind the seven deadly psyops. Psyop is short for psychological operation, and it basically is something that I think we're all aware of, that there are certain engineered, sustained deceptions that are rolled out and we are taught them. And when we're deceived, we're really harmed. And as I've said before also, deception is probably the most dangerous and harmful of all violence, because we don't know we're being harmed. That's the amazing thing about it. Like if someone comes up and hits me or abuses me, I know I've been hurt. But with deception, we have no idea. We think that, oh, those benevolent people, they're helping us. and they're really enslaving and stealing and so forth. So to be able to understand and not be fooled by deception, I think, is really one of the critical things. So the more we can cultivate discernment in our world today, I think the more we can live an authentic spiritual life and make a positive difference. It's not enough as vegans to just be vegans and work on ourselves, but I think also to cultivate discernment. So you probably know I'll be speaking on Saturday with Dr. Silas Rao, and that's going to be a discussion we're going to have about climate change, because that is the, in my article, that's the seventh of the seven deadly psyops. And the other ones, I'll just say quickly, number one, the big one, the most important one by far, the most powerful one, is animal agriculture. I call it herderism. Herderism, I love that word because it's actually what it is, herding animals, imprisoning them, impregnating them against their will, stealing their babies, killing them. That's herding. But it's not just the action, it's the mentality. We are herders. We control and own and dominate animals. So that gives rise to all the other psyops, basically. The second one is sexualization, which I think is devastating to our society. The more I think about it, it's really rampant and perverse, and pornography is really harming young people, and pedophilia, and so many, the sexualization of everything, of women especially, of course. And so all of this really just destroys the ethical foundations of a healthy communities and families, and is weaponized against us tremendously. I don't think we have any idea how devastating that is. And then the third one is materialistic science, which I've talked about before, but basically the idea that technology is going to save us. We have problems, but don't worry, technology will, and it won't. I mean, believe me. I mean, look what it's done to cows and pigs and chickens. Their lives are worse than ever. It disconnects us from nature. It disconnects us from our true nature. It poisons us. It surveils us. Everything, it's easy for a few people to dominate everyone through technology. So we need to abandon that idea and get back to the truth, which is that spirituality is what will make our lives better, will save us, essentially, is our consciousness awakening. And then the fourth one is the fractional reserve banking and the central banking system, which really over the centuries has allowed a very small number of people, 1/10,000th of 1% of the population, to accumulate so much wealth that they control the narratives, the governments, the educational system, the corporations, the media. And that is, we have to really understand how that all works. And then the next one is the germ theory, which makes us afraid of germs and afraid of each other and contagion, and sets us up for all kinds of toxic pollution by toxic chemicals, and protects industries from seeing what's going on. And then the sixth one is overpopulation, that idea that there's just too many human beings. And vegans love this one because we don't like people. We wish all the people would disappear and get off the planet, so stop ruining it. But again, I think this hatred of humans is not a good idea. We're beautiful beings. We have tremendous capacities. And culling the herd is not in our best interest, and we are really have been brainwashed about this, I think, for the last 100 years. Then the final one, anthropogenic climate change. Certainly climate change is happening, but the fact that we are doing it, again, as a cover for the corporations to keep us not looking at the toxic chemical pollution that they're actually causing, and then to create a narrative that sets us up for 15-minute cities, so-called smart cities, to take away our freedom of movement. Because if you want to enslave cows and pigs and chickens, what do? You take away their freedom of movement. So it's really, for me, it's a spiritual practice to do the best we can to not be fooled, like Pete Townsend said of The Who. We won't get fooled again, but we keep getting fooled over and over again. I mean, it's just amazing to me how we keep getting fooled. And we keep fooling each other, and we police each other to make sure you better go along with this, or you're a heretic. So I've taken a pretty big risk to write this essay, but I just thought somebody's got to say all this. And I think the thing is, it's like we have to be willing to admit we're wrong, and I've been wrong about some of these things. I promoted climate change for 10 years or 12 years, and then I admitted I was wrong. Yeah, that's. And now, because if I didn't admit I was wrong, I'd still be eating meat and dairy, right? So we've got to admit we're wrong, and then, good, move forward. So I'm happy to admit I'm wrong if someone can show me evidence. But anyway, thank you all again for all of the work you're doing to cultivate these 7 heavenly virtues and discernment and also. To be part of the vegan movement that I think is really making a difference of the understanding of that one life lives through all of us at a very deep level. So, Tammy, you have your hand raised. I'm not sure if would you like to make a wonderful contribution of some kind? You always do, so it'd be great to hear from you.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm not feeling super wonderful right now, but I'm here, so thank you. But Judy, I had a long conversation with Judy Carmen before this. She's
oh, good. I'm so glad to see Judy. I know we didn't think
that it's always there, that spiritual connection's always there, right? That's not really based on the, one of the lies that we've been told, that we have to be a certain way in order to be shiny, right? I mean, we have to do the right thing, but there's been this enoughness going on in the world, and it's releasing that. So I'll just release that right now. So, Judy and I were also talking about something a friend of mine and I were talking about over the last couple of days, is there's this really, it feels like this really profound upshift of consciousness on the planet on a spiritual level. And it's really shaking things up for a lot of people to be in full alignment in their relationships, in their conscious communities, in their conduct, right? So, I mean, no matter where we are, there's always room, right? And I've been in a lovely relationship with a vegan for a while, but he doesn't know that there's a river that he can go to. And I love him deeply, but you can't give somebody, as Gabriel Cousins says, non-causal love and joy. You can't actually give that to anybody. And, Judy and I were talking about how women, we can get really codependent and we want to make everything all better. And she was talking about the Wendy syndrome, Wendy and Peter Pan taking care of all the boys all the time. And, most men will let you. Most men will let you take care of their emotions, remind them when things need to be done, where you're going to go next, and then help pick you up when you're feeling a little low and make you a nice little meal. So I guess I'm feeling that this consciousness, I'm even seeing it in some young people. My daughters in their early 30s don't take care of their husbands. Like, they don't feel obligated to make them dinner every night. And at first I went, oh, like, if you're making dinner, why not make dinner for both of you? So it's a new world. It honestly is. And I get it now, because if you start over caretaking boys and they've been over caretaked by their mummy, you're going to become their mummy. And I'm just, so what I want to talk about, because my book is actually getting bound right now, Will.
The new one on relationship?
Yes, oh, finally. And Will edited a book for me and wrote a beautiful endorsement called The Essence of Sacred Relationship. So I'm really grateful for this relationship, for being able to just really download, you know, what really feels like would be really sacred, even if it's not happening yet. You know, sometimes we learn the most in the learning, like when we're in the middle of it, right? When we're in the thick of it, you know, because everyone's in the thick of it in some ways. But I think the thing for me is like, so I'm ending the relationship this weekend, and it's been really hard coming to it because I love him and we have 3.5 years together. But I feel like my spiritual non-causal joy is decreasing. And I just think there's a really huge upgrade on the planet right now. And I think the very best way we can show up is to be in non-causal joy and love. And it's hard to do it if you're always somebody else's mentor. Like that you're in a sacred relationship with. It's fine if somebody comes in, you know, to my treatment room for an hour. That's a totally different relationship. You know, so I guess what I'm saying is, can you talk, this was a really, thank you for letting me go on. Hopefully it meant something other than to me. But could you share a little bit on sacred relationship? I know you and Madeline, you know, and I'm sure it hasn't been perfect. I know, you know, my teacher, Gabriel Cousins and Shanti, I know it hasn't been perfect. I've been a very big part of their life for many years. Like, it's never perfect. It may look a certain, but it's a lot of spiritual commitment and sacred relationship, right? Like you used to always say, it's not 50-50, it's 100, because often both of us can't put in 100. But that's also true in sacred communities too. So if you could just speak a little bit on spiritual sacred relationship.
Right. Okay. Wow. It sounds like a lot.
I know that was a lot. Sorry.
Brewing. A lot is brewing. But you're right. I think it's good to say that there's an upgrade in the consciousness of humanity right now. I think there's a lot of truth to that. It's kind of a purification going on. There's more polarization happening, I think, because of it. And maybe people are getting more sensitive to differences and how it could be. But when you talk about sacred relationship and about non-causal joy and love, I think you're getting close to really the spiritual foundation of relationships. And essentially, like for me, I am spending quite a bit of time in just living in meditation centers as a Zen monk, and you know, not looking for any kind of sacred relationship, just wanting to awaken my own consciousness. To me, that effort was critical, and I try to keep that going. And so, like when I met Madeline, I wasn't looking for someone to have a sacred relationship with, to make me feel better or something like that. It just happened. And I think in many ways she was in the same place. You know, she wasn't really trying to have something. But when we came together, it was more of a feeling of we have work we can do together because we both love the vegan, you know, the vegan message, and we both love spiritual practice. And then also, you know, music and art. She loved my music and I really liked her art. So there was these different levels going on. So it's like you say, it hasn't been, I don't know if I could say perfect or imperfect, but it hasn't always been smooth sailing. But I would say overall, once we get over some of the initial bumps in the road, because she was, you know, a Swiss who had certain ideas about relationships, and I was a California guy who thought something else. And so, you know, we had our, and you've probably heard some of the stories. The one of the paper airplane, you know, the paper airplane story. I sometimes tell that one, but that's basically, you know, we just had to go through those things. You know, the paper airplane story. I remember this was so funny because it came back in China. But when we first got together, the first year or so, sometimes we would have these misunderstandings. Her English wasn't that good, and I was like, what the heck? How can you say that? You know, but so we were like at one night we couldn't even talk to each other. We're out in this little house on a dirt road, and so I just wrote her a little note, and I didn't even want to give it to her, so I made it into a paper airplane and I threw it over, and it landed on her desk, and she picked it up and she read it and she smiled, and so we kind of got together. And so over the next few year or two, maybe every once in a while we would do it. I'd throw in a paper airplane if I had to, And the funny thing was, we were in China like 25 years later, giving a talk on veganism and so forth. And then the Chinese people, we were touring around to these cities, and we were doing big. These were like 800, 1,000 people every night, with concerts and lectures being put on by Buddhist groups that wanted to bring the vegan message, but also with lots of fanfare and festivities and music and so forth. It was really beautiful how they did it. And at one point they said, you know, we just can't get over your relationship, you two. There's just so much love and energy going between you. Can you tell us your secret? And so we both stood up there and we talked for a few minutes about the importance of food, like, you know, having food together that's really, doing what Madeline calls Mahlzeiten, which means meal. When you're eating a meal together, you're really with each other. You're not talking about politics or anything else. It's really a time of sharing. It's kind of like when I studied the Japanese tea ceremony. You know, you create a beautiful atmosphere, and you don't bring the worldly stuff in. You just, right now, we're eating, we're thinking about how wonderful the food is, and with each other, we talk about things like that more. But we talked about, anyway, the importance of organic, whole, vegan food, eaten with love and caring, and the importance of having a mission together, and the importance of, like you said, like, you know, really, like 50-50 never works. It's got to be at least 80-20, or, you know, in terms of positive statements to the other person, not being critical and so forth, and just learning to practice loving speech. And then I just happened for some reason to tell that little story of the airplane, and they really liked that story. And Madeline also kind of mentioned it as well. And then we went to the next city. Then the next day, we had to take the train or fly, whatever it was, up to the next city. And when we got there, there was this whole big hall again with a beautiful piano with flowers everywhere, and they all the chairs had little tables, and on every little table, because they drink tea, you know, so they have tea as the lecture goes on, and on every table there was a paper airplane. And so during the whole event, at one point I was giving a talk and I said, let's everybody, you all have a paper airplane, you know, I had no idea they were going to do that. And write a little note on it and just throw it to somebody. So they just love doing that. So they wrote a little love note or something and they threw it. And of course, when you throw a paper airplane, you don't know where it's going to go. It just goes all over the place. So the rest of the night, there were these silently flying little paper airplanes throughout the hall and with little love notes on them. And then at the very end, there was a big grand finale where this chorus came out and sang a traditional Chinese song. And they had a whole basket full of paper airplanes, and they started throwing them everywhere. So people were just laughing and singing and throwing paper airplanes all over the place. And it was such a teaching for me, because I remember what was the seed for that. It was like I was out by myself. Madeline and I were out by ourselves in this little house out on a dirt road in Northern California. We were kind of angry with each other, everything else. And you know, I just threw a paper airplane, and she got it, and she smiled. It's a tiny little seed. But that seed, it just, it's like this is what happens in our life. We're always planting seeds by our thoughts, words, and actions. And so that little seed kind of germinated for 25 years, and then it just burst forth on the other side of the world with 800 people throwing paper airplanes and laughing and singing and dancing and shining love, you know. And I think that's the key thing in relationship, is that we're always in relationship, even if we're alone. You know, we're somehow relating, we're creating, we're doing something, and we're planting seeds. So just do our best to plant seeds of loving kindness in all of our relations, and then it'll work out. I mean, in the big picture, I just tend to think in terms of multiple lifetimes. I can't help it. I've been marinating in Eastern religion for like 50 years. And to me, this is just one life of many. And so, you know, in this life, maybe next life or other life, you know, we just plant the seeds. And the more we do that, I think the more we have a feeling of spaciousness in our life with relationships. We see that we can't change anybody. They have their path. They have their ripening process, how it is. Maybe it's good to be together, you know. And there were a few times when Natalie and I were kind of questioning, like, is this really? But we both really just knew it was the right thing. So that's all I can say. And for me, it's been especially the sense I always have deep down that Madeline is always working hard on herself. You know, I know that. And so that's, to me, it's just so precious. It's so beautiful. And so I feel so blessed. I've been so blessed with my relationship with her. But in general, the whole underlying idea is that relationship is a spiritual practice. Like you write about in your book, you know, so well, it's a spiritual practice and it can help. It's a mirror. You know, we're always getting everything mirrored back to us. And I remember quite a few times that temptation, like we think if only she was different, you know, if only she was a little different, then I would be happy. That would be so much better for me. And to me, it's like, as soon as my mind goes there, it's poison in a way, because it's like, no, my happiness. I mean, I didn't spend my entire 20s sitting in meditation thousands and thousands and thousands of hours so that my happiness is dependent on someone else, what they do. I mean, then I'm a slave. Then I'm a total, like them, at the mercy of other people. And other people, you don't know what they're going to do. They can yell at you all of a sudden, get mad, get jealous, get freaked out. You know, you don't know what they're going to do. So the whole, it always comes back to my own consciousness being fundamental. And I think, you know, like you say, you're bringing up this idea that you have within you this river that's flowing. And it's the river of that you can go to that's always there of non-causal joy and love, like joy that doesn't need a reason in the world. I'm not going to be happier if I get this or if I didn't have that. It's just there. And you can't make anyone else understand that, right? I mean, we can be an example of that. But I would agree. I mean, I would say if I was in a relationship where I really felt that I was just losing that and I didn't have a sense of joy that I had before, that would be a kind of a warning. That would be a bell. I would be like a warning bell. And I think, but then, you know, we all have our unique response to whatever the situation in our world is. And that's the beauty of a human life, I think, really, is we can't necessarily change the outer world, but we do have always within ourselves the capacity to change or to control our responses, right? How we respond to the situation. We can say, all right, enough, or we can say more, or we can, you know, but it's really our responses. Because sometimes I think I look out in the world and we, you know, especially what comes in on the computer, and I think, wow, there's so much division and hatred and ridiculous stupidity and all these things happening. But the whole idea is, okay, that's out there. How do I respond? You know, and that's the beautiful thing, I think, about being a vegan, is that we see the suffering of the animals, and we don't just say, well, that's too bad. You know, we actually respond by no longer buying them, no longer paying people, and we respond maybe by sharing the many benefits of this and working on ourselves and also and so forth. So the time is short. We're just here for, you know, a few decades. And I think every action that we have, we're planting those seeds. And the more the seeds that we plant come from the deepest part of ourselves of understanding that we have a purpose for this lifetime, and that we won't be happy if we're not fulfilling our purpose. And I think that's the thing. And to every day try to reconnect with our purpose, what that actually is. Because I think it kind of changes, perhaps, as time goes on. It's kind of like a meal, right? You don't just eat once and then you don't have to eat anymore for the next 20 years, right? We every day we're kind of nourishing ourselves. So we need to nourish ourselves every day by reconnecting with our purpose, with our mission, with what's most important now. And it may not make sense in the outer world in terms of our our reputation or what people think we should be doing and all that kind of stuff. It's really very personal. No one can tell someone else if they're living their life well or if they're being successful or any of that. It's really a very, very personal thing. So anyway, that's some of my thoughts on your question that you raised. I think it's really something very important. And I really wish you well with
Thank you.
The process.
Thank you.
If you have anything you'd like to say more, Tammy, or if anyone else has a question or comment, it looks like we have a couple more minutes if we would like them.
Well, I think the one thing I just want to add, like, there's a bit of a danger in thinking that we need to be completely healed and full of non-causal joy and love when we get into relationship, because relationship, that's the job of it, honestly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Our stuff's going to come out. If you think you're enlightened, as I was listening to a Rich Roll podcast today, if you think you're enlightened, get into a relationship. you know, and right. So, you know, that's a danger to feel, well, I'm not healed enough. Because I love that about relationship is bringing each other, you know, or showing each other, hey, do you remember the rivers just like a few feet away? Let's go jump in naked and have a nice swim in natural. Like, it's cold. It'll be refreshing. but I guess it's just like we're in relationship all the time and it needs to be balanced. That's all. And I do believe in masculine, feminine energy. And I do believe, like, I have a lot of masculine chores. I take care of that acreage on my own. And it's a lot of work. And so if I have somebody that's, like, really very flowy and doesn't really see anything that needs to be taken care of and stuff, it doesn't give me anywhere to relax. And so, you know, I think there's so many factors involved, but I think it's really important to honor where we are getting our nourishment also from and where we need to just dive deeper into just nourishing self, because I think that there's a lot of stuff coming through in the next few years.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important to be super spiritually, like, grounded and happy. Like, I don't mean happy in the airy sense, but just really, like, find the vibe, the vibration, the pulse of that non-causal love, right? So that's just kind of how I'm feeling. I just think it's, I guess all I'm saying is I think it's so critical right now for us to be really grounded in our spiritual practice, because I think there's so much stuff coming and I think we're really needed.
Yeah.
I think really, really needed right now. Yeah, that's all.
Yeah.
I took up a lot of time today. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And the whole thing of masculinity, I think, is a real problem, especially for men and women both. But there's been a big sort of shaming of men over the last 20, 30 years, and talking about toxic masculinity. And it's made a lot of men afraid to be men and try to be more like women. And I hate that, really. I mean, we need strong men who take responsibility and are protective and are grounded and get the work done. You know, I think that's fantastic. I love it. I mean, I think, you know, this idea that, you know, vegan men are kind of soy boys, kind of just, you know, kind of womanly, kind of feminine. I don't resonate with that at all. I think, you know, we as vegan men are manly, right? I mean, we're not feminized. I think it's something to be sensitive. It's good, you know, we're sensitive to the suffering of others, but we're not ashamed of being men think it, you know, that masculinity is toxic. It's not. Masculinity is beautiful, and so is femininity. I mean, the feminine is getting trash also, but I think
hallelujah.
It's hard for young people now. I see it. I have to say, I'm so glad in a way. I was born when I was in the 50s. I think being born 30, 40 years later, there's been so much toxic programming of men and women that they're having a hard time really bonding and having children and having making it happen. Plus, there's a lot of economic pressures that are very difficult to deal with, and it's definitely a challenging time. Like I say, you know, planet Earth is like a gymnasium, and the weights are very heavy. you get your strong muscles. It's really challenging here on planet Earth. I mean, right, especially right now, I think. So what you're saying really resonates with me, that it's more important than ever that we take time every day to nourish the inner silence, the quiet mind, the connection we have with the source of our being, and remember our true nature, to just come from that as we go through the day, and have patience with other people. Everyone we meet is wounded, and don't take things personally. I think it's really important also as we go along. Looks like we have a couple more minutes, two more minutes. So if anyone has one final question or thought or anything, I just want to say, welcome Elena. Thank you, Elena, for joining us. I'm thrilled to see you here. Elena is from Germany, and she's a brand new World Peace Diet facilitator. Just signed up with Sean Hutchins, who we know. He's the fellow we had on a couple of maybe a month or two ago, who has a beautiful piece of land in North Carolina. And so he's now also a World Peace Diet facilitator, part of our group. And Elena and Madeline and I worked together in Germany. When was that? Maybe 2018.
2018, I think.
Yeah, and we did. You put on three or four lectures. We did, I think, in Germany, all over Germany. It was really wonderful to hear that you're going to be joining us. And so it must be like 1 o'clock in the morning or something. So bless
it's
you.
Three.
Three. Oh no. Bless your heart. Wow, you're really dedicated. I am really so glad you joined us.
I'm happy too, and it's great to see you.
Oh, thank you so much. All right, well, why don't we go ahead and wrap up our call? And as you may, some of you who are very astute may have noticed that Lisa Wong was sitting in my place. And you saw, so now she's here. She's from Florida. So let's say our prayer for animals. It begins with the words compassion in circles, like that. I think most of us know. And unmute your microphones. Everybody can unmute if you don't mind. So we have a nice divine
together.
Together. Compassion in circles, the earth will all be
everywhere.
Great, again. Compassion in circles, the earth will all be everywhere. Great, and one more time. Compassion in circles, the earth will all be everywhere. Woo-hoo! All right, everyone. Thanks so much. Wonderful to see you. Thanks for joining us. And good to see you, Jennifer and Kenny. Yeah,
good to see you.
All right, everybody. Much love. Thanks for joining us, Keith, all the way from Australia. Also, bless you. And Kenny, everybody. Angel, thanks again. Much love. And we'll see you maybe on Saturday. We have our thing with Silas. And then on the third Thursday, we have our.
Thursday we have our, and we'll be here next month on the first of November.
We'll still be here, but then we go on the road. All right, much love.
So this is your newsletter. Will, yes. your talk with Silas, did you send it out in your newsletter?
Pardon me?
Did you send out the link for your talk with Silas?
Yeah, I sent it out. It's going to be at 2 p.m. Pacific time. On the vegan community platform, 2 p.m.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks.
Much love. Take care. Bye-bye.
Love.